Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well trained, well equipped, and battle hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Splendid.
Please welcome back to the stage, Naomi Smith. Alexander Ray. Rick Norton. I am Ed. And what is the new people by my time back, editor-in-chief, Ardith Mathari.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing? Yes? Are we feeling hopeful? Hopeful about democracy? Who's feeling hopeful about democracy? I think we have...
Do you need that go democracy chair? We
have to work on that a bit. The question is, can we? And this is what this next conversation is going to be investigating. In contrast to Peter Jukes, my sort of relationship with our friends across the pond is slightly different. I grew up, I'm Sikh Punjabi. My parents are immigrants from the British Kenya and India, and I was born in London. So interestingly enough, our influences were never that European. My parents voted for Brexit, which is a whole other complex strand.
Dark secret runs in the family.
Wow, yes. I voted to remain. But I have to say, not because I had any deep attachment, actually, to Europe. It was more for practical reasons, because we didn't really grow up with that sort of attachment. But neither did any of my influences growing up. How's it really look at American culture? And none of my family, we never visited America when I was younger. And I was a student of law when I got to university, and I studied a lot about the Constitution and the rule of law and how much America has always been held up as this absolute beacon, these absolute ideals that it prides itself on. And I always used to think, God, there's like quite a gap, isn't there, between these ideals and what we have in practice. And I always used to find a lot of hypocrisy in that, I guess. And finally, I made it to America at the end of 2023. Peter, Steve, and I went on a work trip to New York, and I got there, and it was great, but everyone was saying they were all going to vote for Trump again, which was really interesting. And the same thing they all said: we know he's a liar, we're not saying he's a great guy, but he's a businessman, and he's strong, and we can't have Biden. So a very, very interesting trajectory. Now, Donald Trump once said he was going to be Mr. Brexit, plus, plus, plus. And I guess Brexit was the defining moment that came just before his election. You've got your problems in America, Rick, but we are on our seventh prime minister in a decade. What have you made of what on earth has gone on in the UK from our cousins across the pond?
Look, the tools and temptations that have led America down this path are present here as well. I mean, Farage is a sort of Temu version of Donald Trump. But that temptation, the authoritarian temptation, as we talked about, is built around a set of tools, a hermetically sealed media environment where people of a certain age, particularly, get indoctrinated into ideas that have no reality behind them. So the idea that Britain was going to do much better economically when it cut itself off from the largest economic bloc in the world. When you say those words, you think no rational person could believe that. But they were hearing Brexit will stop the brown people from coming over here and we'll make more money. That temptation, unless you break the systems that are so effective at persuading so many people, you're going to keep having one political crisis concatenated onto the back of another and another and another, which is why you guys are feeling very strong Italian governments turning over every 90 days in the 80s vibe right now. It's not quite that bad.
So would you say there's a flawed sense of exception? I mean, all countries think they're exceptional, right? Take the UK and the United States. Would you say we share a flawed sense of exceptionalism that plays out in different ways in the two very different cultures?
You know, I'm going to actually
say... And that's done us in the last 10 years.
I'm actually saying that the US and Britain are exceptional in many ways. They have been countries that have flawed pasts, and they've tried to address them haltingly and ineffectively sometimes. And they've been more self-aware than many countries in the world about their flaws. But I will also say that because we are the character of both our peoples, we have been susceptible in some ways to the rise of propaganda, the rise of authoritarian nationalism, than folks who grew up with authoritarian nationalism. You know, once you've been in a dictatorship, you're cautious about them. I have a friend who is an Iraqi expat, or Iraqi refugee, excuse me, living in the U.S., and he said to me one time, he goes, yeah, everybody who was around Saddam knows this guy, when they were talking about Trump. He's like, we know this guy. And when it starts out like, I'm going to make the economy better, and then it's, I'm going to kick the door down and have my secret police drag your family out and shoot them in the street. And we've never had to live with a dictator in office, with an authoritarian, with an autocrat. And the sad thing about the U.S. is that, this is an advantage for you, but in the U.S., Donald Trump idolizes autocrats. He loves Kim Jong-un. He loves Putin. He loved, you know, Maduro before he's kidnapped Maduro. You know, the whole thing. He likes the strong.
I like a strong man.
So much, he went and took him.
Right.
I wanted him near me at all times.
And after all these years, I should do a better Trump. I know.
Every time I try to do Trump, I end up with Carol Channing.
What is that?
I kind of know. I see the impression. And then I end up with Carol Channing for that.
Not bad.
But in at least in Britain, none of your prime ministers, I mean, Johnson was sort of just the tip authoritarian, have been as overtly...
There are children here.
Sorry. Have been as overtly in love with dictators as Trump has been.
Yeah. Maya, in the hellscape that is the Trump years in America, have you taken any time out to be concerned about the UK?
Absolutely, because I thought you guys would have figured it out by now. You're so much older than we are.
I guess, but our shit is just under the table, including class, which is our big driver. Very unequal.
And I think that is a piece of it, because in the U.S. Sometimes people will have the argument that it's not race, it's actually class consciousness that we need to address, and I actually agree in many ways, though we do have the complexity of race, and you have the complexity of race, and so there have been so many parallels between fights for civil rights in the U.S. and then simultaneously those same fights here, that I feel like we haven't had the opportunity to, especially with this go around, recognize that we can learn from each other, which is why I'm so glad that we're doing this, because the whole men are from Mars, women are from Venus, well, we're all on actually the same, like, flying ship right now that is crashing. And so we can learn from each other. And yeah, I'm terrified, but I also love that you guys keep trying. Like, you're like, maybe not this prime minister, maybe this one.
Well, this is what Naomi, you were
if
saying.
If at first you don't succeed.
Well, you were saying in the earlier conversation about these guys stuck with Trump, right, for his full term. Here, one of the advantages we've seen is mainly the Conservative Party eventually get rid of their leaders, get somebody else in. I mean, how have you absorbed the decade of seven prime ministers, Brexit, everything in our political landscape shifting?
Starting a podcast. Like every good political commentator. It has been a roller coaster of emotion because I enter politics professionally because of the referendum. That's when I joined. And then obviously everything that's happened since... seven prime ministers, and maybe we finally got a good one. What's so difficult about it is that you're constantly getting to know new people, not just in the post, but all of the people under them, you know, all of the special advisors, all of the infrastructure that goes with each change of regime. It is so much more disruptive than just switching out one person. And we've coped with it by just having that North Star of what we want to be focusing on. And that, you know, just keep going towards that mission. And the tectonic plates of politics shift underneath your feet all the time. It's very, very difficult to have a plan for your organization and a strategy. It's emergent. You have to keep tweaking it and be agile. And so I've done it by curating my life to be surrounded by people I work with and who I spend time with, and my podcast hosts and the community that listen to it, of people that believe in those values and just want to get to that destination that we know we deserve.
Mm. Well said.
And Alex, is there a particular moment that stands out for you in the past decade where it was sort of the ultimate crack in that system? Again, we talked about the good chaps theory of government before, and the entire point of that is everything is fine on the surface. We just have to have good chaps who are educated at Eton and Oxbridge and who did PPE and can talk in a very posh way, and it's all fine. They'll be honourable. But I think in the decade that we've just lived in, the cracks in that, the fallacy of that has been laid bare. Is there anything that in particular sticks out?
I mean, Brexit is obviously a moment, but I think for me, Johnson not resigning after Partygate was kind of a seminal moment. It really knocked me back that this scandal had been revealed that should result in that person saying, sorry, I'm off. And he just decided to front it out. And he just decided to say, black is white and white is black, and I'm just going to
do about it.
Very, 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 very Trumpian. And I think that was the moment where a politics genuinely snapped.
Yes.
And since then, I understand the attraction for someone stuck with Trump in the model that can change someone out if they don't work out, but we've kind of overdone it. So it's like, you know, someone walks in the room now and 5 minutes later everyone is like, no, I don't think it's him. Who's next?
It's almost the like the bumble of...
Will Larry make another PM? That was the question. Will Larry make another PM? Will the cat make another PM?
Larry the cat?
Yes,
I mean... God.
He's very old.
I'm aware, yeah. He's up there.
I mean, this question of leadership and what the last decade for the United States and the UK has revealed, I mean, it's a really serious point here, isn't there, about the tone that is set right from the top.
There is, Hardeep. Sorry, guys, I'm going to stand up for a second. There is.
Inspirational bit coming out.
TED Talk. Okay. Did unexpected.
I'm only accidentally inspirational.
Okay.
Look, I was in politics for 35 years, and I have worked with presidents. I work with governors, I work with senators, and some of them have a gift. Some of them have a kind of odd magic about them that you can't replicate it, you can't duplicate it. It has to be organic. You can't train them into it. It has to be organic. It has to be something that starts to shift people's hearts and change their lives and give them a sense that there's more to politics than the noise and the anger and the inside games that draw people down and make people give up hope. And sometimes you can sense a movement out on the horizon like a storm cloud. And sometimes you can sense a leader out on the horizon like a storm cloud. And sometimes you can hear the sound of that movement coming towards you.
Bravo.
His fin face.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. What an unbelievably natural segue. Thank you. Very lovely to be here. Sorry, I've been in Clacton.
My lord, you've been in Clacton all day. The train, Andy Burnham hasn't yet fixed the trains. Trains back from Clacton, as I understand it, quite poor. But the question we all want to know, I think, was when you were there today, did you see the former MP? What is he now? The High Sheriff of Bailiff of some
Chiltern.
The Chiltern Hundreds.
There were a few types.
Were they there? I bet. Any sign of them?
No, I didn't. But I do know that I got interviewed by some newspapers. The Clacton Gazette, obviously. Very important. Local news. The Eye Paper. The Eye Paper were off to try and find Nigel that day. They seemed quite trepidatious about it. Where did I hold these interviews? The only place I thought possible. The function room in the Toby Carverley. Hey. It's what the journalists deserve. In fact, you want a little scoop?
Yeah. Your Excellency, when I interviewed you in depth a few years ago, you said you were just about to have your first bindling and were thinking of packing it all in. What happened? Did you become addicted to politics?
You mean packing the bindling in? Now, that's illegal. Yes, you did interview me in depth. By in depth, it was a basement in Angel Islington.
Yes.
Which had a very low ceiling. I wasn't very happy about that.
Completely true.
I mean, you know, these kind of personal questions asking me about my 900 bindlings. It's just slightly fewer than Boris Johnson, but, you know, you're allowed a hobby, aren't you, Alex?
Sorry.
I give up. I'll tell you my scoop instead.
Yes.
Yes, you want to hear it tomorrow?
Yes.
Did anyone here read the Financial Times? No, of course not. But anyway, it's remarkably absorbent toilet roll. That's why it's still pink. Anyway, they have a slot, apparently, where they take an interesting person out to lunch. Do you know that? Well, apparently, that's what they want to do with me tomorrow. But apparently, the guest gets to choose where to go for lunch. And they gave me the entirety of the UK to choose from. So I chose the only place I thought where... I'm a tourist, right? Where'd you go for lunch? Hard Rock Cafe. Love it. So I'm taking the FT to the Hard Rock Cafe. See how they like that?
That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And I'm learning to be an MP, but that's a sideshow.
So Benface, I think in
British... Excellency, up yours, mate.
Oh. Look.
It's count.
But protocol is not in America now.
Protocol is not America's strength.
Quite.
Your Excellency, Your Imperial Galactic Majesty.
Now we're talking.
Yes. Yeah. As we know, the essential thing in British politics today is to have your own crypto billionaires supporting you, like Nigel Farage has. Have you yet acquired your crypto billionaires?
Have you not seen my manifesto? It's very clear. I say I will not accept £5 million crypto donations from billionaires on Earth.
So if Elon gets into space soon, he could?
Could go fuck himself, yes. Every time he goes into space, if I'm in control, I'll charge him £1 billion. That's my tariff. Space is mine. Get out of it, fucker.
If you guys could facilitate him getting to Mars sooner, we would be grateful.
Yes, well, I'll do my best. But, you know, the thing is, his rockets have a habit of not getting exactly where they plan to go to. So I think it might be a while before he's up there. He's not that stupid.
So, Count, how is the campaign going in Clacton?
Well, thank you very much for asking. Well, you know, it's going, which is one thing. Just 2 weeks to go. It's a bit of a marathon, but I've got my manifesto out. I've been visiting a wonderful establishment in Clacton today, a plumbing showroom.
Ah.
I understand this is the year of the plumber. The Green Party had a plumber. She got elected. The Reform Party had a sexist plumber. He didn't get elected.
No.
And also, it's the only job that AI is going to steal. You guys are all in deep shit. But,
So you're trying to associate yourself with plumbing?
Not trying to learn a trade. I think that's wise, isn't it?
And what about the people of Clacton? Have they given you a warm
welcome? Or?
Very much, sir. Oh. Lovely. Well, every person in the United Kingdom is wonderful up to a point.
Up to a point, yeah.
And so far, Claptonians, Claptonites, have been as good as any of them. And yeah, they've been very, they've taken me to their heart. In fact, this afternoon I went to a podiatry clinic. Because I thought the phrase vote with your feet. I thought it was literate. I got a bit confused. But it's fine. She checked me out. Lovely. And apparently in the waiting room, it was an elderly couple. And they were both Nigel voters. But they heard me having a chat with the podiatrist. And the man became a Binface supporter. Woo! Yes. But wait for it. And it nearly led to a divorce. So, you know. Bam with them all.
And just like, what do you make of our political system? It's a bit sort of, it's a bit crazy, isn't it?
I don't know what you mean.
No.
Yes, it is a bit.
What do you believe we must see more of in politics?
Well, let me just take a second actually to celebrate. And obviously having Rick here, I would like to know if you agree with this. But I would say, and I hope you guys appreciate and agree with this, that if I'm here, I want to cherish, defend and celebrate the unique wonderment of British democracy, right? Only in the United Kingdom do you get that moment on election night where any of you can stand for a mere 500 quid and 10 signatures and a couple of other bits and bobs, but you can stand against the Prime Minister, a member of the UN Security Council, or Nigel Farage, on a pokey village hall or sports hall stage, and they have to be there with you. It's the great leveller. It's unique. I tell you, it's unique in the entire cosmos. There's only one planet in the entire omniverse using democracy. You're one. How many planets are using democracy properly? Zero. But it's still endearing, you know. Basically, I always say, for me, stumbling upon a planet using democracy is the equivalent of when you happen upon a branch of Wimpy.
I loved you, Wimpy.
Yes,
yeah.
You do. And you think, fuck me, is that still going? It's seen better days.
It had a Bender Burger, didn't it?
Sorry?
Is that Wimpy's with the Bender Burger? No, I can't remember.
It's a Bean Burger. I'm aware of that. Don't be careful if you eat that one. But the point is, yes, it's seen better days, but you still fancy a bite. That's how I feel about your democracy. So, I mean, Rick, do you not agree that it would be better if Donald Trump had to face an intergalactic space warrior on election night? I'd take him to the cleaners.
Bring your spacecraft, darken our skies, and come on down. We would love it.
It doesn't stand.
Exactly.
And we shall hashtag it Bennett to win it.
So bloody right. Make your vote count.
In it to win. And if you do make it to, when you make it to the House of Commons, I mean, have you had any chats with any insiders about whether you'll be able to, you know, be full bin when you're an MP?
I have, actually.
And they've been okay with that?
Well, I'll tell you the full story. Interesting. Almost always female journalists ask me about taking off the bin. It's almost always. I don't understand it.
I'm asking you to take off the bin.
No, well, it sounded like that.
Maybe that's what you wanted to hear.
No, not at all. I'm just telling you the statistics. Anyway, my vital statistics. Anyway, the point is, I went on a BBC Newsnight. Did anyone see that?
Yeah.
Yes, live on BBC Two. Paddy O'Connell being very cheeky with me, but I gave as good as I got. But then lovely little Nick Watt, who sat next to me, revealed that apparently British parliamentarians have been spending time in the House of Commons working out how to accommodate me in my full regalia if and when I win. Now, you might think, haven't they got other things to be worrying about? But I take the compliment nonetheless.
It's so inclusive. I love that.
It is. You wouldn't have thought so, would you? But progress.
So you'll be bringing your trash can chic to the House of Commons?
But if they vote me in, that's up to the Clactonites, isn't it?
It is.
If you want a local champion, and I do appreciate the irony of that sentiment, but if the choice is between Nigel Mirage and me, somebody you would actually listen to and stand up for the people of Clacton, and dare I say it, put them on the star map. I mean, let's be honest. This is a once-in-a-lifetime moment. Is there anyone from Clacton here? No, of course not. That's the kind of tactical error I make all too often.
There might be some listening.
I'll make the point, though. It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance. This is not Votey McVoteface. This is Votey McVoteface. This would be known for the entire history of the cosmos. Come on, let's have it.
Well,
and you'll get cheaper 99 flake ice creams to boots. You see?
Well, Cal,
populism.
I think the entire panel salutes you in your quest. You are doing a public service. So we thank you, and we will see you in your full regalia in Parliament.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. Good luck, Hamburgers.
Thank you. Thank you, London. It's a pleasure to have been here. I love you all. And remember, at the next election, whatever you do, use your vote. It's brilliant. Make your vote count.
Follow that.
So,
and you thought I was the only exotic alien in the room.
So, do you see why I want you to take us back?
Well, I was so crazy.
It
decade.
Just gave Stephen Miller to drop in.
So we may be on the seventh prime minister, but this represents hope. Is it a hopeful moment for the UK? The mainstream media is looking into Farage. Andy Burnham is the Prime Minister, and Cal Binface is taking on Reform UK.
Byline Times has been leading the charge on the Farage stuff for ages, and one of the great things about independent media is that, and we see this in America all the time, the mainstream media knows things. I mean, they know Mitch McConnell's dead, and they're pretending.
Well, we just don't know. We can't find a single person to sneak into a hospital and check.
But a lot of people want to look away from the problems. And when you have independent media that will go and dig and push and ask again and again and again, you will start to get accountability. And in some ways, the thing I love about Count Benface is the absurdity of it on the one level also points to the ridiculousness of a goddamn con man like Nigel Farage, who should be playing three-card Monty at a truck stop somewhere, trying to rook the tourist rubes, you know, find the lady. You know, none of this stuff with the craziness of a Farage or a Trump, the comic aspects of it, in some ways you've got to go further in the comic mockery of them. And I think this, and look, for all that, that's a guy who believes in democracy more than Nigel Farage ever will. Okay, he believes in democracy more than Nigel Farage ever will. Nigel Farage believes in whoever's going to be on the next crypto teat that's going to feed his lifestyle.
So in preparation tonight, I got on TikTok and started just through Nigel Farage's TikTok, just one after the other, after the other, after the other, sacrificed in my algorithm.
Yeah, the stuff you're going to be served up.
What was most interesting, because the reality that he creates is the reality that people see. And so the first few videos that I swiped through, I was like, oh, he seems like a reasonable gentleman. Oh, he's visiting with people and talking about how he's making differences in their lives. Oh my God, he doesn't want brown people. But it took several swipes through several videos. Yes. And so that's the danger of somebody like Nigel Farage, because they can appear reasonable if somebody only sees a certain piece of what they're saying or decides they only want to see a certain piece of it.
In some ways, Maya, that is also those people's Achilles heel. And that's why satire like that is actually very serious business, because their fundamental need is to be taken seriously, to be seen as great men. And so to not take them seriously, to laugh at them, is the worst possible thing you can do to someone like Trump, to someone like Farage.
And you've had your own novelty candidates in the US in the past, I believe. Like, this isn't a uniquely British thing. It didn't.
So we have a guy named Vermin Supreme, who runs every cycle, who wears a boot on his head. He only runs in one or two states. And sometimes he'll run for a statewide office in two states at the same time. Sometimes he'll run for president. But nothing rivals the penetration in the culture and the media and the politics in the states like Count Benface has here. And but you're absolutely right. Authoritarianism's most brittle characteristic is it cannot be mocked. If you mock it, it's going to fall apart, which is why, you know, at the Lincoln Project, we have for years not just said, oh, my God, we're doomed because of Trump is an evil superpower. We've also said he's a clown. He's a joke. He's a fool. He's impotent. He's old. He's sick. He's weird. He's got a chin that looks like a turkey waddle. All these things are poking at him and poking at the absurdities of what he does and says and is, because that triggers the questioning, like, is he really Superman? Is he really the creature that you can't defeat? And a lot of MAGA men try to have that bulletproof affect now. I don't care about anything. I'm going to do what I really want to do. You know, Stephen Miller down in his basement masturbatorium every night, you know, watching videos of immigrants getting deported.
Children.
This guy.
Masturbatorium. That's a new.
We may have to edit this out from the show. Or put some kind of warning at the start. This is too much of it for
me. I think the warning was Lincoln Project. I think
in America, though, part of the job of facing up to the evil is telling them you don't think they're that goddamn serious. Is telling them, try all you want. It won't make you cool. It won't make you tall. It won't make you smart. It won't make you handsome. It won't make women want to be with you. All of it's a weird cultural trick. They're trying to hype themselves into victory. And most of them are really ugly, fragile, terrible, broken creatures. And sometimes if you're treating them like supervillains, they'll be more supervillainish. If you're treating them like a joke.
The problem, I think, is that that is also too complicated an analysis in a way. I think a lot of the voters are in it. I don't think this would sell as a surprise to me.
Well, I will say this.
I think the platform is a lot simpler than that, and that's why it works over here as well, and that's why it works in every country. It's kick them until they hurt as much as I hurt.
Right.
And it's as basic as that. So they don't care if they do worse.
Like the sadopop.
Provided that you also do worse. Look, you also do worse.
That,
right?
That was true up until the summer of last year in America.
When everyone started doing worse.
Because the tariffs started to hit. And a lot of these folks, these very committed Trump voters, these MAGA voters. And remember, when Donald Trump took office in January of 2025, among Republicans, he had a 94% approval rating. That approval rating now is about 60. In that summer, the economic damage that tariffs did to farmers, small businesses, families across the country was astounding. It has kept going. And they thought, oh, it's a joke. It's Trump. He'll do it for a little bit, and then they'll back down. He's never backing down. And they figured it out. And that's why Donald Trump's approval ratings now have fallen below what we call the Bush line. When George W. Bush really botched Katrina, the hurricane in New Orleans, his polling got to about 30%. And that was the apocalypse politically for the Republican Party of the time. Donald Trump's numbers now are between 29 and 31%, depending on the poll you looked at as of today. He is in a free fall, and it is because the pain he's inflicting on migrants isn't enough to offset the pain he inflicted on his own supporters.
So, Maya, I just want to... So, we're thinking about the UK and the lessons we can learn from our cousins across the pond. I mean, in many ways, the analysis of the Keir Starmer years here, where they were the Biden years.
Year and a half. Year-ish.
It's a good point, actually. The Starmer years. Year and a half. Okay, it was our Biden period. And Andy Burnham won a by-election in Makerfield. He defeated the Reform UK candidate in a seat where Reform had quite a stronghold, right? It's too soon to say we're out of the woods here, right?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely way too soon. I think he's been handed a mixed bag. Things are very difficult right now because nothing actually changes the economics of this moment at all. So having a new person in charge, just like every other person who came before him, he can't just with a magic wand change everything. And so people are going to be, again, the restlessness as they are anticipating. It's like, oh, it's fun. Yay, somebody else is new. Okay. And that sort of destabilization, if you will, for a moment. And there's like a moment of hope. But he can only do so much.
And he has to work within that system. I mean, is that something that the Labour Party and the UK and the Democrats in the United States have in common? That actually what people are crying out for is transformational change.
Yes.
And that involves changing the structures of capital, like capital neoliberal power. And if you can't deliver that, it's pretty difficult to ultimately keep that bounce.
I would argue you have to, like, the idea of changing the structures of neoliberal power is exactly the kind of line that the Labour Party and the Democratic Party would use. You have to talk to people where they are. And in politics, it's in the gut and the heart, not the head. You've got to say to people, I know you're hurting. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to focus on you first, on what you need first. Because a lot of issues that will drive the Democratic Party in the U.S. and the Labour Party in Britain are what we call luxury issues. Because the guy who has to get up in the morning and go work a manual labor job, he may care about climate change, but he cares a whole lot more about whether he can pay the rent for his family. And you've got to get to the economic gut of people, and you've got to get to them in a way where the populism on the other side that blames immigrants for their economic woes is exposed. You've got to talk to them like you understand what they care about. You've got to be speaking to the gut and the heart, not the head. Don't put out 900-page policy papers. Go to people. Andy Burnham should be showing up at work sites across this country. He should be going to job centers across this country and talking about life becoming more affordable, and we're going to fix these problems that are affecting every voter in the country. And I know the temptation in any party, right or left, to have these boutique issues that you think define the party or should define the party. And voters don't care about a lot of the issues that elites and parties think they care about.
Well, the good news is that Andy Burnham is going to do that. He's going around the country.
He's already doing.
He has begun. However, the levers he has at his disposal are very limited and are being made worse by Donald Trump and the tariffs and the war in Iran. And we have an interest rate hold today. If you cycle back 12 months, we would have hoped that we would have had at least 2 rate cuts by now. Right. We haven't. So you can tell people, I get it and I hear you and I'm going to fix it. But if you don't fix it and you can't because of exogenous factors, you just become number 8 prime minister to go in a decade.
And to share out responsibility, I think there is also quite a big demographic that wants transformational change.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That costs nothing. You know, and we have to own up to that as voters as well.
That, so, and say a bit more about that.
So what I mean is there may not be a moment when we're out of the woods, Maya. And we have to internalize that. We have to accept that fascism is a cold sore. It never fucking goes away. It just waits for your immune system to weaken and it comes back. So this is not a fight that will ever end. And if there is a mistake that's been made previously, is that we thought the fight was done.
Yeah.
Or we white people. I don't know. Black people felt the fight ever.
Well, I want to ask you guys a question. In America, the corruption of the Trump administration has finally broken through as a political issue. Britain has its share of corruption issues of billionaires, whether it's the crypto guys with Farage, the Russians splashing money around. There's a whole bunch of different areas that you guys have, not identical, but parallel corruption issues. Do you think Burnham can do something on that that doesn't require, you know, the massive spend that, say, a big national jobs program would take?
Yeah, of course. And there is a delayed bill working its way through Parliament. It'll be brought back in September, which will look at addressing a lot of that foreign interference in our elections, money. Bylines have produced many an article talking about it. It probably won't be sufficient, but it is a necessary step. You know, we are not yet in the stage of having the levels of money in our democracy that you have, and nor would we want it. And I think, you know, there probably is to be something much more radical and transformational in maybe saying that, you know, we only have state-funded political parties and we allow no private donations to them whatsoever. Look, there is all sorts that can be done around constitutional strengthening that wouldn't cost much money. It might cost a bit of time. It might cost a few MPs their jobs, but there is a lot that can be done and should be done that wouldn't cost money. And then, of course, there is the lever of Europe. That is one he can pull. It is one where the door is very much open, and you don't even have to be a fully fledged member, which would take years to negotiate, to reap the benefit. Signalling that you might join will immediately have, you know, a good impact on gilt yields. You're going to have interest rates coming down. Sterling will rally. Investment will begin to come into the UK that has currently been frozen in terms of the decision being made about whether you put steel in the ground here, because they don't quite know what framework they'll be operating within, EU rules, UK rules, whatever. So, you know, WTO, when China applies to join that, it's a decade before it actually joins, so that it begins to get all of that growth and investment.
So it can be a scary defect.
There are a lot of things this government can do, but they're all radical.
Sure.
One of the things you just said, Alex, is a really good question, which is there are many, many things that would embody that sort of transformational change that don't require lots of spending or don't require expending as much political capital. It can be done. So then the other question becomes, then why wouldn't a prime minister like Andy Burnham pursue that? And here I want to talk quickly about the media landscape. And in this way, I think what's really interesting about what's come transatlantically been transmitted to us in recent years is this very Trumpian press that has developed. We always had the papers, right? We always had the tabloids. We always had the Daily Mail. We didn't always have GB News. We also didn't always have GB News, its owner also owning Unheard, also owning The Spectator.
And also,
right?
And also, Hardeep, The Telegraph, not so long ago, used to be a newspaper of record. And now it's churning out, frothing in the mouth, mad stuff, because it is directing it at a much bigger audience across the pond.
Yes.
And so a lot of them have actually pivoted to face that way. And they churn out these pieces about how, basically, if you go out in London wearing a watch, you're going to be stabbed in the eye within 5 minutes.
Have you guys watched something like
that? That's not for us, because we experience London, right?
Yeah,
we know that's not true. That's for a different audience.
Have you come across all the violence?
I haven't come across the violence, but I was warned about the violence from my friends in Argentina. They said, you see what's happening in London.
Are you telling me the sun isn't on the up and up?
But this thing about playing to the American audience, so the politicians on the right of this country see a lot of money coming their way from these think tanks, from organizations in the US. They also see a lot of personal wealth to be made by pivoting as a very right-wing populist in the vein of Trump and the MAGA movement. And so that is, what is your advice for how the UK steals itself and makes itself less vulnerable?
I mean, the US is no shining star on this. But we actually still have
at least a paper-thin set of regulatory things that prevent so much media concentration into the hands of one or two individuals. But part of this has to be the, you have to foster independent journalism. People are thirsty for news and fact and truth, and they get over and over again fed a diet of garbage in the American media. And it is increasingly terrible, in part because they feel like there could be negative regulatory consequences for them from the administration. I think for Britain, you guys have had a long relationship with Rupert Murdoch, who I like to refer to as America's most dangerous immigrant. And he shaped a lot of that landscape.
That was before Musk, right?
Oh, yeah, listen.
Because there's Elon, no competition for that.
Elon is a separate category at this point. But having media hygiene in a country is a really important thing, and governments are terrible at doing it, especially governments like ours that have a general embrace of free speech, a general embrace of political speech being a category that's more protected. But it is really tough. It's a hard assignment for countries. And as things like GB News grow in this country, you will learn that the other side of the political equation on the right and the authoritarian side, they will spend money to change minds and hearts. And it might not even look like something you think. It won't look like the sun. In America, there's a whole generation of young political influencers trained by an organization called Turning Point USA.
Oh, yeah, and we've got that now.
You've got it now. The disease has spread. And these kids look like young 20-somethings, and for the first 6 hours of their content on TikTok, it's, you know, get ready with me to go to work today, and what do I like to cook? And then it becomes, and this is why immigrants should be killed. And while I am slightly compressing that story arc, I'm not compressing it too much, and the influencer culture is something that I think has become politically powerful. And I think transparency rules in the US and the UK on when people are being paid to deliver a political message is really important. We had a bunch of right-wing influencers in America who were being paid $400,000 a month to tweet Russian anti-Ukraine propaganda. And these people are people that are invited to the White House to be with the president, and there was no regulatory oversight about it until the Department of Justice came along and said, you're not allowed to take bribes from Russia for any reason that involves political communication in the States. And yet that culture, that influencer, the influencer industrial complex exists here. And they've found that is an incredibly effective way. People develop these parasocial relationships with these influencers. It is a great danger, and you need to be alert to that. I think in the UK, you're probably... That tidal wave is coming here.
Yeah, it's already here. You've talked about it a lot of the show.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know how quickly, I mean, you say it was sort of several nice videos before you got the horrible one. When we've at Best for Britain set up accounts from, we've pretended to be a youngish man, not living in London, whatever. It is like seconds before, because of that very small amount of demographic detail they've been given, that they will be served far-right content.
Right, you're getting the Andrew Tate 30 seconds after
your end. Very, very, very quickly. And so what I want to know is, well, where are the philanthropic billionaires on our side funding people to fight fire with fire? Because otherwise we're turning up to a gunfight with a water pistol. You know, if a teenager is getting $15,000 to do a 15-second video... And organisations in civil society in the UK are on their knees. We had one close quite recently, the High Pace Centre. They did brilliant work, but they ran out of cash. Other organisations are very starved at this. I mean, we're doing what we can, but
yeah.
Are you seeing people funding young people of your generation to combat this?
Thank you for saying young people of my generation. I appreciate that. I'm strongly Gen X. But I think not just the funding issue, because the funding issue is not equal at all by any means. Most of the content creators on the left are creating in their free time on top of the full-time job that they already have. And people don't understand that that requires research, being able to edit your own content, being able to stay on top of the flood of information that is coming in. And so we, even if we had all of the funds in the world, it would make it very difficult to combat the right, because lies spread much more easily than the truth. Rage is, when I put out just like a nice hopeful piece of content that talks about actual solutions,
no engagement.
And this is, I think, where, sorry, I would reach out to the two of you. This is where you can help, actually. Because our electoral cycles are slightly out of sync, your election will come round probably before ours. And so the midterms are coming, then the election, inshallah, he will be gone. And I am usually a reconciliation kind of guy. You know, I'm a nice progressive. I say, let's now unite the country and heal the rifts. Not in this case.
Oh, hell. Well, she's too far. I'm down with a flamethrower.
Yeah. Fuck them up. Find every single fucker who made money out of this and start issuing court summons.
Right.
Yeah. Because there needs to be consequences. So, there is never consequences. They come in, they steal all the money they can, and then the nice people come in and try to fix everything. Well, there needs to be consequences to what they've done to your country.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, but just really quickly, there is a psychiatrist, Dr. Bandy X. Lee, that I've had the opportunity to interview. And she was so brilliant because she talked about how once you give that permission structure, how it trickles down into society. And so without consequences, as you said, we cannot have a society. We just can't. And so it's either now or never.
So we're going to end with one final quick fire question, which will just be very, very, very quick. I'll start with Naomi.
Oh, again?
Democracy survives this. Yes or no? I told you it'd be.
Yes. Yes. We have to believe it does. And it will.
Alex, democracy survives
this? Absolutely. Democracy is alive and well and will continue to be here after all these cankerous old men have gone.
Yeah. And you're a Greek, so it's nice to hear that from you. Democracy survives this. Yes or no, Rick?
Absolutely. It's too stubborn to die.
Maya, what do you think?
Absolutely, but we have to talk to each other.
Yep.
We do.
And like, fight for it.
And we are.
Thank you so much. That was so interesting and funny and engaging and exactly what we need to be doing more of. Thank you so much to the panel.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.